gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Math's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Math, mothers and fathers align, saving kids. Kids of all ages and all stages for mental health issues, including addiction, molestation, whatever the issues may be, struggling with school, acting out behaviors, at risk, whatever it may be, feel free to call the Mass Confidential anonymously. You can call 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. Maybe you want to jot it down for yourself, for a loved one, maybe for a neighbor or someone you used to sit next to in shul. Maybe you want to just give them the number. They're struggling family members, and they would appreciate having some support. Our number for our helpline once again is 718-758-0400. Tonight I have on with us a guest that has been on in the past several times. We're always so appreciative that she makes the time in her busy schedule. And that's Chaya Mermerstein, who is a clinical social worker and a family therapist. But she also is the co-coordinator of SOBRI, which is a division of Mount Sinai Beth Israel. I'd like to welcome you on tonight. How are you, Chaya? How have you been?
How have I been? We've all been trying to do our best, I'm sure. First of all, I want to thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about SOBRI and to just publicly acknowledge all that you have been doing, particularly during this very difficult time. So there's a lot of hakaras hatov that we should all have to mask.
Thank you, Matt, and my wonderful staff, who really has been sticking it out. We've been open. The helpline has been busier than ever in all my 23 years during this pandemic, how families have reached out to get the help that they need for their loved ones, anxiety, addictions, whatever it may be. So thank you.
I was just going to say that our helpline has also been particularly busy.
Yes, I know. We have clients that have called you and have gotten so much assistance from your helpline. So yashar koach to all of you there as well at SOBRI. So let's tell our listeners what SOBRI is, please, for those that may not know.
Sure. SOBRI Helpline is a helpline that's confidential and anonymous, and we are particularly geared to working with the religious community or Jewish community where there has been sexual abuse. So the caller may be anybody from the person who is the survivor to family members to other professionals calling for, about questions and resources about sexual abuse.
And so for our listeners that may have children around, I think it's a good time now to either put your radio, if you have it on speaker from your computer, however you're listening to the show, I would recommend that you put it into an earpiece on or make sure that you're in a room that you're alone without anybody underage listening to the show. So, Chaya, you say molestation. Before we go to molestation, I just want to say there are some camps open. There are some children being you know, sent to different programs on a daily basis. There are some day camps. There are some local get-together backyard camps. We are in a pandemic. We are trying and hopefully doing the social distancing and wearing the masks. But I want to talk about the importance of not letting our guard down. What suggestions do you have for parents that are now sending their kids out of their home? And also, if you can talk about watching the children in the home.
Yes, thank you. Those are two vital pieces of information. The first piece, you know, this year is a little bit different because in the past, people have been gotten, you know, sleepaway camps, which seem to not be happening for the most part unless people have gone out of state. And it applies to them as well, is getting letters telling parents that they must have the talk with their children about how nobody, it doesn't matter who it is, it could be a counselor, it could be an older person, does not have a right to intrude on their personal body space, no matter who it is, and that they should never be alone with anybody and should not get into a car ride with anybody, and that people have to be very, very careful to tell their children that if anybody does that, that they want to know about it because people need to be protected, that this is vital, vitally important. So many times it's happened. I've had patients myself who've been in the country and have been lured away by a counselor or somebody just working in the kitchen, you know, while they're taking a walk, you know, near some trees where it's quiet. So people have to be very careful to be in groups and not to be going off on your own. That's really very vital. And also to have a point person in the camp or at home or both, ideally, where if something, chas v'shalom, happens, they have somebody that they can tell so that they don't have to be embarrassed and feel that they did something wrong, but to know that whatever it is that happened, that they must go and tell somebody so that it can stop. So that's one piece of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt.
The other piece is on what, being that this is a little bit of a different year or a very different year, a lot of kids are home. And so that presents a different kind of issue. I've had calls from parents who have noticed, and unfortunately it's become known to them, either through the person that it happened to or through somebody else, that there's been inappropriate touching from an older sibling to a younger sibling. And that is something that has to be really very carefully watched. So, for example, you really need to know where your children are, as hard as that can be sometimes. And children should not be alone in a room with a locked door. That cannot happen. You should be able to, if it's a teenager, just knock on the door and, you know, and wait for response and be able to come in and not allow there to be this kind of isolation, because it's in the isolation that abuse happens. So people have to, so that's another piece. The other piece is the computer or the phones or the internet. Parents need to know what their children are watching, what their children are looking at. Computers need to be in a public place, not in a quiet room where they can close the door. And sometimes kids are not even looking for anything like that, but we will know that there have been pop-ups that have come up. I work in a hospital, and I've had pornographic pop-ups come up. So we know that this can happen almost anywhere, and we have to be very, very careful about monitoring what our children are watching. And I think that's another piece, on the computer, on iPhones, and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. You know, we have to have the conversation with the children early, because sexual abuse doesn't discriminate with age, race, background. So
that's correct.
We're talking,
yes, it's a good. I want to make the point.
Very young. Yes.
Yeah. The point that I want to make is that some people still believe that an abuser will look like there's something wrong with them. abusers look like you and me. And they come across in a very normal, regular pattern of behavior, but still have this aberration. And it's often, often not something that you can identify. That's why some people can't even believe that this, that something happened to somebody, because he seems like such a nice guy. She seems like such a lovely lady. I can't believe it's true. But unfortunately, too many times it is true. And children need to learn that their body is their own and nobody has a right to touch them. And that even if they go to the pediatrician, mom has to be in the room or dad or so on. So that they have a right to say no. Or I'm not comfortable and run away. Actually, in
right.
Israel, they give out little keychains that say, you say, lo, rat, and you tell. Run, you say no, you run away, and you tell somebody. Just three little things to remember that children should know. And that
so,
is just some of the ways to, you know, build in some safety.
Right. I'm glad you brought up that there's also a book that Rabbi Yanki Hurwitz has made. It's called Let's Stay Safe, and you can buy it in all the bookstores. You can buy it on Amazon, and it's a wonderful picture book for children that to get the conversation started. It's got pictures, personal safety, and it talks about all safety, but
all
it's
kinds
a way
of,
to get the, it's a way to provide the parents with like a comfortable beginning point.
Exactly. That's very well said. Yes. But that book is wonderful because, again, I bought it for my nieces and nephews, and what's so interesting is they say, oh, read me that book again. They like to, and it's good to just keep reading it every once in a while just to refresh the memory. And it's all about safety of different kinds, so parents who feel uncomfortable with the subject can see how they can integrate it among all the other subjects that children need to be careful about. So it's a wonderful referral.
Right.
That book is an excellent resource.
Right.
And it comes in Yiddish, by the way.
It comes in several languages, correct.
Right.
So let's go to what is the difference from a parent's point of view when a child shares that they were touched inappropriate to when a child, an older child, may have shared that they were molested. So remember, we're on the radio. We don't want to be too graphic, but we want to give them the understanding of the difference. Thank you.
Yes. So one of the most important things that a parent needs to remember, and one of the hardest things to do at the same time for some, is to just accept the information. Instead of, it's really very important that the parent not interrogate the child to the, or the young person to the point of thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said something because, you know, the caretaker or the parent is having a very strong reaction and not looking like they can handle it. And it is something very difficult to handle. There's no parent wants to hear this message. That's obviously very, very clear. But when a child is finally telling the parent about something that happened, it then behooves the parent to get any information that the child wants to give, tell them that they believe you and that you will do everything to keep them safe from now on. And not be critical, not ask any details in particular. That will come when they're in a therapy and that needs to happen, that will happen. But the initial reaction is extremely important. It's very important for the child to feel relief that they were able to tell and feel that it was accepted. And that really is step number one.
They have books for kids on, you know, the Tickle book, Uncle Willie Tickle, you know, that book.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't remember the exact name right now. But I do want to say that anybody that wants to look for books, they can go onto the Mass website, massparents.org, and there is a book section, and you can go on and look for different books and different topics, including this topic, so for kids and adults. So I just wanted to mention that.
That's a very good point. Can I add another point related to that?
Sure.
Because I think that's an excellent point. See, one of the things that happens is we go to, you know, Uncle Mayor's house, and people will say things, meaning very well, oh, give him a hug, give him a kiss, sit on his lap. And if a child does not want to, that really needs to be respected. I think we come from a tradition where we're warm and caring and loving people, but when children don't want to kiss somebody, they don't want to sit on somebody's lap, nobody should be cajoling them and trying to get them to do that. That teaches them very early that their body is not something that they can control. And, you know, none of us want to kiss or be near people that we don't particularly want to be near for whatever the reason, and the same thing should really hold true for children. So we have to be very careful about not pushing or letting other people push people on them. I've seen people just pick up children that they barely know, and the child is kind of looking at them in shock. It's like, who are you? Because, oh, you're so cute, so I picked you up. But, you know, that's not something that a child will integrate as anything that, you know, will make them feel comfortable. So we have to be very careful about that as well.
So there are families that have called Mass and their child was molested and have been through great therapies where they were able to get their child help. Like you said, mm-hmm. we always tell the family when they call, do not ask your child details. Yes. The answer, the idea is yes. Why? You will find out eventually, like I mentioned, but the more details you ask and they see your reaction on your face or words you may use to respond, like, how could that person have done it to you? Or how could what? They may shut down, and it'll mm-hmm. be harder, much harder
exactly.
for any therapist to get them talking again because the reaction was so, you know, mm-hmm. negative by you. So,
right.
But can you discuss the kinds of therapy that work best when may find out?
So therapy, when that happens, therapy has to occur on numerous levels. It's not like I just send my kid to therapy and that's it. First of all, it's going to be extremely important to the parents, hopefully from the therapist who is seeing the child, to get support, education about how to deal or interact with the child around the issues that are coming up. Some kids will be acting out. There are all kinds of ways that children present themselves when there's been a history of abuse. There's also the question of if the perpetrator lives in the house, if it's a sibling, what do you do with that? Those are things that all need to be worked out with a reputable therapist. People who've been trained, needs to be people who have been trained in understanding the dynamics and the complexities of sexual abuse, its impact on the individual, and its impact on the family. And so it needs to be people who are trauma-informed, understand the impact of trauma, because by educating the family, they understand why the behaviors might be what they are, what to do to ensure that there is some kind of healing that begins to happen. But it becomes so finding the right person. Sometimes you need, if it's a sibling who has perpetrated on a younger sibling, there might need to be two different therapists involved. And there needs to be collaboration among them. There's a lot of help to be had for children who've been in this kind of situation. We have all different kinds of therapies that have been developed in the last 10 or 15 years, which have been very, very helpful for children and young people and even adults who have situations where, because we get calls from people who are having situations in marriage where they are feeling that they're being, you know, taken advantage of in terms of intimacy. So the important thing to remember is that it be a therapist who be trauma-informed, who understands trauma, who's had training in trauma, and training in knowing how to deal with sexual abuse, who's comfortable with the subject, and who is able to talk to the parents in a clear way so that they can calm down, because it's something that really stirs up the most intense feelings, understandably, so that they can continue to start to heal and to fix what went wrong.
I want to talk about Shabbat afternoon in people's homes. On the NAC helpline again,
yes.
Doing this 23 years, over 100,000 families that I've spoken with, and, you know, we've helped and assisted in getting them help. I do want to say that a very large percentage of molestation and inappropriate touch has happened Saturday, Shabbos afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Parents,
yes,
go and take a nap. And
yes.
You want to go on and talk about it, because they end up...
I can only reiterate what you just said, that it is 100% true. We had a case referred to us at Sovry where the kids, there was two girls and a brother who were playing, and the mother was supposedly supervising and fell asleep. And in the course of the play, the boy started to, you know, become inappropriate with one of the little girls. Thank goodness she was able to tell her father when he came to pick her up that, you know, he hurt me. And, you know, she wasn't afraid to do that. But exactly that kind of thing, that there needs to be supervision. Somebody needs to be up. Somebody needs to know where the kids are. It's a job. And, you know, you need to know where they are. And if you haven't seen them in a while, you need to find out where they've been, where they're going. And oftentimes, unfortunately, groups of kids can get together. And sometimes there's something called play doctor where, you know, kids will, like, look at each other in curiosity. But then there might be somebody in the group who becomes aggressive. Because one of the questions I often get is, how do you tell the difference between playing doctor, which, you know, a lot of people and kids have done and somehow is something that does happen and without any harm to anybody, versus when it's really abuse? And that's almost always related to remembering that the person that something is done to is saying, no, I don't want to, but are being pushed or cajoled to do something that they don't want to do. So, and that can happen even between 2 4-year-olds. The age difference often matters, but it doesn't necessarily have to matter. If you have a 4-year-old who is aggressive against another 4-year-old, and we've had cases like that, it's because somebody's probably taken advantage of the kid who's been aggressive, and this is how she knows how to act. And that kind of thing is also a form of abuse, because the other 4-year-old doesn't know the difference. They just know that somebody's taking advantage of me, and I don't like it. So supervision, education, being a tellable parent is vital. And it starts when the kids, it needs to start when the kids are young. This is not a good conversation to have when somebody's 15 and you haven't had this conversation before. They need to feel comfortable, because if you won't be able to talk about it, how can we expect them to talk to us about it? So we have to be able to talk to them in a way that, and if a parent isn't sure how to do it, go and talk to somebody. There are so many of us mental health professionals who would be more than happy to walk them through the dialogue so that they can feel comfortable. The parent has to feel comfortable. And we're very happy to do that. That's why some people call the helpline, because they're not sure how to have that conversation with their kids.
And you're always available. Sophie is a wonderful organization to call. Call Mass. Mass.
If there's some,
we will refer, and we will refer you to Sophie. We will get you in touch with Haya or the other staff, and they can ask questions before they have. But the main thing, the main message that we want to give today is two, actually. Message number one, please have the talk with your children. But remember that it's got to be young age. Don't wait until they're teenagers. Start young. Mm-hmm. And also, when you have a relationship and you talk to them about it, they will come and share with you when something is uncomfortable. If you don't have the talk, then unfortunately we've seen thousands of times already that it will be a problem later on. The second thing is that we want to say is don't push it under the rug if it happens one time. One time is too much, and it can become a problem later with all mental health issues, including self-medicating with drugs. So there are plenty of families that only find out years and years later that their loved one, who they thought needed a psychiatrist and a therapist and a doctor and a new school and another program, was because they were molested when they were younger. They did not share it. And with their parents, they didn't feel safe. And they're finding it out at 19 and 25 and 35 years old that they were molested years and years ago.
Ruchama, so well said. I had a 70-year-old woman who told me for the first time, 7-0, that she had been molested. Yeah. And so people think that, you know, these things recede into the background, but they do in a way. But she told me, even though she was a grandmother, she goes, I never trusted men, she said to me. And I said, why is that? She goes, you trust men? To her, it was like, how can you trust a man? It was amazing that she was married and so on. I don't know the quality of her marriage, but I'm just saying she had no idea that there was somebody to tell.
Well,
in her time, that was not something anybody talked about. Can
thank
we leave
God
our number?
Yes, please do.
Our number is 1-888-613-1613.
Well, thank you very much for running out of time, and I hope that you are well and stay well, and that everybody has a very safe summer.
And thank you so much for the opportunity. It's greatly appreciated.
You're welcome. Okay, I want to wish everybody a very good evening, a wonderful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually hug tight for now. Thank you, and have a good
night.
Thank
you. Good night.
This is Nathan Zalta, inviting you to join me on my brand new radio program, Erev Shabbat Live with Nathan Zalta, on 620 AM WSNR, this and every Thursday night from 9:30 to 10 PM. Say Shabbat Shalom with Nathan Zalta, featuring the best in music, talk, and news. Once again, on 620 AM WSNR, also at talklinecommunications.com. Looking forward to sharing this time with you. Erev Shabbat Live with Nathan Zalta, 6:20 a.m. WSNR, Thursday night, 9:30 to 10 p.m.